a waiter waiting for the Holy Spirit. The Honorable Judge was asking for to calm down. So we really could not accept that. So we have to proceed. We are on chapter 3, appointment of secretary. And Jenny can take us through this.
I think the appointment of the secretary speaks directly to the civilian secretary in terms of the constitution, falling directly under the authority of the executive, which is the minister. So 6.1 speaks to the minister, must subject to the law governing the Public Service Act, appoint a person as secretary for peace. The secretary is appointed for a term of 5 years, which is renewable for an additional, and I think we need to put one there probably to line up with the ICD, one additional term only, subject to the terms and conditions of service under the laws governing the public service. The secretary must be a citizen of the Republic and a fit and proper person with appropriate knowledge, experience and qualifications. The secretary must not be a member or former member of the South African Police Service of the Republic contemplated in section 99 of the Constitution. And I think that's to ensure that it is a civilian body and doesn't blur the lines between them and the
people. I think members don't have a problem because I think it's clear the renewal is one term only. So we can actually proceed unless members want to get something, okay? Duties and functions, clause 7.
Just for clarity, Madam Chair, that's very clear.
Where at what stage does Parliament get informed?
Jefferson, there's no obligation in terms of this for Parliament to be informed. Not in the same way as with the IPIT executive director, because this is a political appointment. Because the person must have the trust of the minister, so there won't be a necessity for Parliament to be informed. I mean, the minister will inform, I presume, Parliament out of courtesy, but I mean, there's absolutely no need for parliamentary involvement in this.
Honourable Judge,
Honourable
Members,
Honourable
Chair,
Honourable
Members,
Honourable
Chair,
Honourable
Members, Honourable
What's the situation with the National Commissioner? Is the same thing?
National Commissioner, the Minister does inform Parliament about the appointment. Not for Parliament to okay or not okay, but Parliament gets informed.
I don't know. Why I'm asking the National Commissioner, because the National Commissioner is a DG. Mm-hmm. So there's no obligation. But I'm worried, but the Minister still informs. A portfolio committee. No minister would appoint a DG and not inform the portfolio committee. But what worries me is what honourable analyst is saying, that the minister may inform Parliament in cases. What if we, because you, unfortunately positions, they are not for permanent. You got a chef with a good to just. It means you will only meet the person after 3 months if you happen to. I think without saying in consultation, which would mean the minister must, but I think it should be said that the minister must inform the portfolio committee about the appointment of the secretary.
Yeah, I'm really checking if there's anything that the parliament must be informed in the Police Service Act. About the appointment of the National Commissioner. I can't find anything.
No,
yes, so why should we include it here?
Yeah. Chairperson, I think if we word in the way that the minister must inform Parliament of the appointment of the secretary and leave it at that, with other words, you don't do like you did with the iPad where you say, and Parliament must within 30 days 30 days to consider this appointment, which we've done in the executive director's case, then that's fine, because then it's just simply minister out of courtesy would via a letter or whatever say, I've appointed Willeleki George as Secretary of Police.
Yeah, but we can, but really, I don't know whether it is going to start. We'll always be informed about the appointment of the National Commissioner, for instance, if not the Secretary, right. We're informed, but not like it's legislated.
Okay.
It's not legislated, but yeah, we'll always be informed.
The duties and functions. The secretary is responsible for the performance and functions of the secretariat, and for this purpose is the head of the secretariat and advises to the minister on peace and policing policy matters. B. Takes all decisions relating to the functions of the secretariat referred to in section 5. Performs any functions assigned to the secretariat in terms of this act or any other act or memorandum of understanding or agreement referred to in section 5.1g. Monitors and evaluates activities and performance of the secretariat and ensures effectiveness and effectiveness and efficiency of the secretariat.
As we have said, that they must have a separate budget. It therefore means that it means the accounting officer, and in terms of the DFMA, it must account to all.
Chairperson, I agree with the Honourable George. I think what should happen here is that, and the two, that we make it explicit. The secretary is the accounting officer, given the fact that we now say it's a separate vote, and then the rest of two can follow.
Are you saying we must have that under clause 7.2?
7.1.
7.1 or 7.2?
7.2 will only can expatiate on that, but I think it must on 7.1.
7.1, AO, whatever. Okay. So,
and rather earlier in the section than later.
So you will write that properly?
It could be B and then change B to C. Do that.
Okay, and then 2, section 7.1,
as head of the secretariat, the secretary is responsible for administration and management of the budget of the secretariat, proper and diligent implementation of the Public Finance Management Act, the development and organization of an efficient administration within the secretariat, and the appointment and deployment of personnel to achieve maximum operational results.
Surely what we have said now will have impact on B, to say, so you will, yeah. The appointment and deployment of personnel to achieve maximum operational results. Okay. Yes?
Just a question, is it necessary to say deployment and organization of an, D, is it necessary to say to achieve maximum operational results? Is it not just, shouldn't one just say the appointment and deployment of personnel? I mean, obviously you need to do it to achieve maximum results. I'm just asking that question. Are we not expanding too much detail here?
That's correct, Chairperson. It's not a problem. We don't need to refer to maximum operational results, just so the appointment. to operational results that are dedicated for under performance agreement and assessment. So, thank you.
As an advisor to the Minister and Secretary must. Jenny?
To oversee and advise the Minister on the implementation of policy directives or instructions issued or made by the Minister, to provide the Minister with the necessary support services to ensure compliance with relevant international obligations, monitor utilisation of the budget of the police service to ensure compliance with any policy directives or instructions of the Minister, present legislation in Parliament as determined by the Minister, and perform such functions as the Minister may consider necessary or expedient to ensure police civilian oversight.
Whether the Minister, the Secretary must oversee the implementation of policy, advise the Minister on the implementation of policy. Okay. Honourable,
just to comment on C, I think we must just make sure that C is now in line with what we've said, the changes of 5B, that we've effected changes on 5B. I think it is in line with the changes, but we must just double check that it actually is.
Yeah, but this one is, this one
is right because it moves away from where this one is. It says exactly what we wanted them to do to monitor the utilization in terms of instructions of the Minister. I think this one is, I don't see anything wrong with this one.
Okay. Present legislation in Parliament as determined by the Minister and perform such functions as the Minister may consider necessary or expedient to ensure police civilian oversight. I think that is proper.
The only problem is that legislation to Parliament is presented by the Minister to the Secretary of Parliament. Staff like DGs and so on, they come and that's why legislation, even when it's presented by the Minister. So I don't want us to give her powers which she does not have in terms of the constitution of the country.
I think there's a difference, and I might be incorrect, but there's a difference between tabling of legislation and presenting in Parliament, because what they're doing currently is they're presenting. Tabling is the Minister, but the Minister is not going to do what they are doing. And if I'm incorrect, and then we need to look at wording, because we still need to make provision that the Secretariat will be the people that present in Parliament legislation coming from the Minister.
That's correct, Chairperson. The Minister's role is to introduce legislation, but to present legislation in Parliament, basically what we're doing here, basically with the interactive role from the Secretariat side, basically. So it's not the same as introduce and table. It's not introducing and tabling, but basically to present,
No, no problem, as long as they change, because that's what I was worrying, as long as it is clear that what we mean by the Minister introducing and tabling, if this presentation is different from that, I have no problem.
So that we're not planning a coup.
The Secretary must, in consultation with the Minister, subject to the laws governing the public service, appoint employees, either full-time or part-time, to the Secretariat to assist the Secretariat to perform the functions or exercise the powers of the Secretariat, or both as may be necessary.
Mm. Chairperson,
what's the difference between that section and D?
Which D? 2D. 7-2D.
Just before she answers,
answer the question. You know, the term employees is very general. It also means employing a tea boy. I don't want to fight with anybody. Employing a tea boy, employing a cleaner. And this one says, in consultation, are you going to consult the minister if you want to employ a cleaner? Is it what you want to do?
Is the minister going to, is he not going to chase you out of his office or her office?
Can I come to employ, come to consult you because I've got a tea boy, which I've employed now. I want to employ. I just wonder because my understanding of D. No, what is this? Yeah. So I'm saying to appoint and deployment of personnel. My understanding there, I was thinking you're talking about senior personnel. So that was understanding. But here now you're talking appoint employees, which means you include all employees. You must consult the minister. So that's what I'm saying. I'm worried about.
Another
person,
Chair,
that's exactly why I'm asking this question because I don't read. D only to be senior personnel because nowhere does it say that. It says appointment and deployment of personnel, and that I thought that is sufficient. I don't know why we've got four, and I agree with Mr. George in terms of in consultation with the minister. If we are in fact talking about senior personnel, then that should rather move up to D. If we in fact are talking about senior personnel, then. But in my mind, that's why I asked. D is actually sufficient, unless there's a very good reason to have four. But I've got another issue that I think there's an F missing. I know you speak here about such functions as a minister may consider necessary or expedient to ensure police civilian oversight, or any other function as might be determined by the minister from time to time. That normal overriding clause that comes in. For instance, you might be acting in another capacity within his office or something like that.
Can you respond to the question?
Can I just respond to
the two?
Can I just respond to four? And that is that it's not that the minister has to be consulted on each and every appointment, but the minister has to approve the staff structure of the organisation, and you employ according to that staff structure. It's not as if every single person that gets employed has to go through the minister and approval, but the minister has got to approve the overall staff structure, and you employ based on that. He then delegates you the power to go out and employ the people on that. So even some of the more senior positions like the chief directors, they don't are normally notify the minister, but he doesn't have to do the appointment. I notify then him who's been appointed, etc. But he has to approve that this is the structure of the ministry. And this is, of the secretary, and this is who needs to be employed. And then the actual employment itself gets delegated to the secretary or depending on which unit it may be delegated down to a particular unit. And that's what we mean by consultation. So we may need to reword that to actually reflect that if it's confusing people.
It definitely does not say what you're saying.
In fact, as I think, what you're saying is not what you said. In appoint employees. In consultation with the minister, it means you can't appoint these employees. What you are saying is different. So this must reflect. But I think also you still have to refer to what Annelise is saying, because if you are saying what you are saying now, as you are explaining, you fall back and you are going right into the trap of Annelise, because it becomes the same as 4D.
Analyst has checked you.
Yeah, one calls that
entrapment. Chairperson, no, I if that is what they mean here and what they want, I agree it needs to be reworded, but then I think it's also wrongly placed. Then it should rather fall under the establishment of the Secretariat, where you say that the minister, in consultation with the minister, the structure of the Secretariat will be established, or whatever your wording is going to be. Because here you talk about the duties and functions of the secretary, and that's just my feeling. And can I just get the comment on F as well that I'm suggesting?
I think that F is, that we would have no problems with adding an F there.
It's just that we could not hear what you say. I just to feel that we can have it here.
I don't know what the standard wording chief is in the F. Is that the any other task as
help you?
Any other task as from time to time?
Any other function that may be assigned by the minister from time to time?
From time to time.
Yeah. Although, Chairperson, I do think it's also covered under E, but if the committee wishes to include E on.
I differ that it's covered under E. E refers specifically to civilian oversight, police civilian oversight. The secretary is currently acting chief of staff in the minister's office. That has not got nothing to do with civilian oversight. So that's what I want to try and make provision for.
Powers, class 8.
The secretary may do all that is reasonably necessary or expedient to perform the functions of the secretary properly, including enter any building or premise under the control of the police service, request and obtain information and documents relating to any matter under the control of the police service, requesting and be entitled to all reasonable assistance by members, obtaining the services of any person, including any state department, country or institution, to perform any specific act or function, performing any specific act or function within the competency or on behalf of any other person, including any state department, country or institution, and performing legal acts or instituting or defending any legal action in the name of the Secretariat.
Hmm.
Can I just say that this comes straight out of the Police Act under the functions of the Secretariat, so it's always been there. It's just never been asserted.
I'm not sure whether that's supposed to instill confidence in us, coming from the Police Act. In fact, it's got exactly the opposite effect on me. Chairperson, I'm worried about E. Can I get an explanation what E means? Performing any specific act or function within its competence on behalf of any other person, including any State Department, functionary or institution. Can I just get an explanation what that means?
Can I also get an explanation on D? You see, E, of course, is repeated in E. What is meant by any State Department? Because I thought your responsibilities are restricted to safety and security, but now you say any State Department. Any State Department could also mean health. What do you need from health? Or education?
Can I say that that I think that we need to align this with what we said about the organs of state in the beginning of the Act. We changed that organs of state definition in the beginning of the Act under the application. So I think this needs to be aligned with the application. But there are instances where, for example, in the establishment of community safety forums, where we require the assistance of social development and other departments to actually work with us around the establishment of community safety forums. Also, there are instances where we get requests from departments, where we get requests, say, from the deputy president's office. They want something on policing, and we have to go out and find it on behalf of the deputy president's office if they're answering questions in parliament, whatever that may be. Now, it may be that we need to look at rewording this and aligning it with that, what we said in the application of the Act, but we also need to enable it to make allowances for us to be able to perform those functions.
No, I agree, but my problem is services of any department. Services of the Department of Education is education. Services of the Department of Health is children. So what? That's why I say, what do you mean? When you say you want services of education, you want teachers to come and teach your staff, or what do you want? Education, health, you want doctors, nurses to come and show your people. What is it?
There might be services in
thank you, Chief. Maybe I can maybe assist. I think the idea or the intention behind that particular thing, see any department. Basically, just to act as broad as possible. So, whenever the secretary would need assistance from any state department, you would want to list and have a close list. So, you want to keep it as broad as possible in order to enable the secretary to perform the functions as stated in this legislation.
And it is a fact, you might not say for sure that they might not need any to perform any function in the Department of Health, for instance. Remember, we take our victims to hospitals, our rape victims, to say, and so on and so forth. So it's possible, research reasons and so on. And our criminals are everywhere. I think I would agree. Yeah. Perform any specific act or function within its competence on behalf of any other person. What does that mean?
I think, as I said, that often we get asked to do something, the deputy president will ask us to specifically look into a matter, but it's within our competency. So it's not just generally, it would be something within our competency where we get a request from a DG, a department, a whatever, to look into this on this particular matter on their behalf because there's a problem in this area.
Chairperson, is that not covered by the word functionary instead of any other person? Because any other person can be extremely wide. So rather to say performing any specific act or function within its competence on behalf of any functionary, including in any functionary or whatever, state department or institution. And then in terms of D, I think somewhere there we also need to put in within its competence. And Chief, can I just go back to D? I'm sorry that I'm doing this, but it's also for us to understand better because it is the first time I've been going through in detail. Is it obtaining the service or obtaining the assistance of any person, including any state department, functionary institution, to perform any specific act or function within its competence, within the sector's competence?
What did you say?
Is it obtaining the service or assistance?
Assistance.
Shouldn't it be assistance rather than service, Chief?
The assistance is
difference between assistance and service.
But should it not be same?
That's why the service is of education.
Their service is educating people. So these teachers. So I think the assistance is better. Because even when you go there, it's more assistance. The criminal is there already, so you want assistance from them to get some information.
Can we use a practical example? I also believe it should be assistance. For instance, let's say the secretary does research on children that are wounded by firearms. They would need, for instance, to go to the Red Cross, the Children's Hospital in Cape Town. And what they want from the Red Cross Hospital would be assistance to give them that information. It won't be the service of the Red Cross. It would be the assistance that the Red Cross Hospital can give them. So I think the word service is wrong, and it should actually be assistance, but also then within the competence.
Yeah.
field of the secretary of Ms. Kameni.
Performing legal acts for assisting or defending any legal action in the name of the Secret Service. Okay. Powers, assignment of powers and function.
Subject to Section 2, the Secretary may delegate to any person in the employ of the Secretary any power conferred upon the Secretary or under this Act, excluding the powers referred to in Section 8F. Authorise any person in the employ of the Secretary to perform any duty assigned to the Secretary by or under this Act on such terms and conditions as the Secretary may determine. And then I'll just go on to the next because it's short. A delegation or authorization in terms of this section must be in writing and may at any time be amended or revoked by the Secretary.
Okay.
Just a question, Madam Chair. Is the title right? Because if you look at this whole section, it deals with delegation of powers. If you look at your reading, it deals more with the delegation of powers. What is it that you are avoiding to call it delegation of powers?
Maybe we should just add delegation and assignment.
Okay.
Jake, and I suggested we always meet in the afternoon because Mr. George is actually very productive.
Removal from office.
The minister may, in consultation with the president, remove the secretary from office if the minister has lost confidence in the secretary on account of misconduct, ill health, inability to perform the duties of that office efficiently.
Madam Chair, why must be in consultation? Are you saying if the president says no, you can't? I mean, the president surely, I think on this one, it must be after consultation with the president. Why must be in consultation? Because in consultation means the president must agree. Are you saying if here is somebody who has done misconduct? Say the president was overseas for 3 weeks, and he comes to that, and he hears that, and therefore I'm not agreeing. Well, why should be in consultation, especially for the reasons he misconduct, ill health, it means probably this person can no longer do the job, or is inability to perform the duties of the office effectively. Why should be in consultation?
I can imagine. But I think it should be in consultation. I think it should. I mean, really, I mean, why would you say after consultation? I mean, you go to the president just for his information.
Well, Madam, of course, the appointment of DG is not in consultation with the president. And consultation with the cabinet. It's the cabinet that approves appointments of DGs. And I don't know in this particular case. It's the cabinet. It's staying in the cabinet. So if you want to follow that route, why don't you then consult with the cabinet of the approval of the cabinet?
Can we get the thinking around this? Because, again, we didn't do that in the item board. So can we just get the thinking around why we want to include the president here when we didn't include it in the item board around the removal of the executive director?
I mean, I don't have a problem with removing the in consultation with the president. I think the current procedure, though, is that, I don't think it needs to be in legislation. The current procedure is even DDGs now go to cabinet for approval. And so you don't have to go back to the full cabinet. You just have to inform the president of their removal because cabinet has approved it. But I don't have a problem with taking it out because we haven't put it in the IPAC bill.
Thank you, Chair. Well, at the moment, as the clause reads, the President has to agree to a decision to remove Secretary Abdi. It has to be in consultation. There must be consensus. Chairperson, that is how the bill was certified. And I'm not sure the intention behind that this is required. So I'm not sure if it's required for practical purposes. But from a practical point of view, the President has to agree to the removal of the Secretary, with the Minister, before the Secretary can be removed. So, but on the other hand, the Minister appoints. So, so it could be interfered. The Minister appoints, of course, the Minister would be automatically able to be able to remove the Secretary from that position. But from a policy perspective, maybe it's something that should be reviewed.
So we don't know why it is here.
I think I explained that with the new appointment processes, it's that cabinet approves the appointments of DDG. So the removal of them, the president must be informed. But I don't think it's necessary then to necessarily put it in the bill in case that situation changes in the future. You know, so I think it's fine, but it was just to reflect the processes. But I think we can take it out. It's not a problem because we don't have it in the IPAC book. So I think it can be taken out. It will still, in practice, probably happen because of the way they've determined these processes, but it doesn't have to be in the bill.
Chair, my feeling is also that it's unnecessary to put it in the bill because the fact of the matter is that I would still like to see the minister who's going to fire a DDG or a DG without informing cabinet and the president. So I really don't think it's necessary to put it here in the bill.
The minister may remove the secretary from office of if the minister has lost confidence in the secretary on account of misconduct, ill health, or inability to perform the duties of that office effectively. You've got to say.
Where do you put crime, madam?
What?
Where do you put crime?
Crime.
Crime is a misconduct. That is a serious thing. Some just think she has committed a serious crime and been found guilty.
Perform the duties of that office. Not having a criminal record is a condition of service. If you acquire a criminal record during your term of office as secretary, you are unable to perform that function. So it's actually covered by C, your inability to perform, because a condition of service is that you do not have any criminal record. Therefore, it's covered under C, that you would no longer be able to perform that duty if you had a criminal record. Line with what was said in the ICD.
maybe even before that, that close chain, you know, I was really laughing. The minister may remove the secretary from office if the minister has lost confidence in the secretary on account of. Is it really necessary that we say he has lost confidence? I think he doesn't have to. The minister may remove the secretary from office on account of misconduct, ill health, or inability to perform the duty. I think that too. To say because you've lost confidence. I mean, really, if you are ill, must I really say I've lost confidence in you because you are ill? You are ill.
Chair, you're right.
In fact, Chair, so
yes.
In the ICED bill, we didn't use the words lost confidence. We simply said the minister may remove the executive director from office on account of, and the same reasons here.
Okay.
Yes.
Can we, while we talk about 11, I think the whole of 11 must be in line with what we've discussed in the IT bill as well. Also in terms of if it's a vacancy that ministers have got a year to appoint. So the whole of 11 needs to be basically cut and paste from the IT bill. Because currently it doesn't speak to those things.
Yeah, I would suggest in the whole of the living change.
Okay. Reporting.
The Secretary must submit quarterly reports to the Minister and the Parliamentary Committee responsible for policing on the activities of the Secretary. So, we basically say that in addition to the annual report, they would submit quarterly reports to the Minister and Parliament. The Secretary must submit an annual report on the activities of the Secretariat to the Minister, which must be tabled in Parliament by the Minister.
Okay. Honourable Annex?
I think now that we've also said that we want them to get their budget from Parliament, we must just maybe look at to bring it in line with what we said in the IPEC bill as well in terms of annual reports, detailed annual reports, including financial statements, etc. So I'm just raising that it needs to be in line with that. I don't think we address annual reports separately in the legislation, if I'm correct. No, we don't. Maybe we can do so separately, it's not necessary, but all I'm saying is I think we need to reword part of this.
Section 2, 11.2, that must be changed, must be aligned, because we aligned the IPED bill with the secretary's vacancy. So just 11.2 with regard to the period for the filling of the vacancy, that must be aligned. So it's not the whole of 11, only 11.2.
Okay. Chapter 4.
Chapter 4 deals with the provincial secretariat, and I think when we introduced the bill, we spoke about the alignment. Constitution of provincial secretariat. Subject to Section 14, each MEC must constitute a provincial secretariat for the province to support and align the mandate of the to support and align the mandate of that provincial secretariat with the mandate of the secretariat. Provide that the date on which a provincial secretariat comes into operation will be determined by the MEC in consultation with the minister.
Madam.
Yes.
Is this not in slight contradiction with what you said? He said the functions of the state steward is responsible for the appointment and deployment of personnel. Because now it means provincial secretary is someone who appointed by the national secretary, but they are all personnel. Then in my statement, we were referring only to national personnel. I thought they are appointing him in provincial secretaries, but if she can just help us, what is the situation? Who appoints provincial secretaries?
I think that's what I said in the beginning, where we refer to the secretariat, unless we put the proviso provincial before, we refer to the national secretariat. When it comes to the appointment of the provinces, we would love to be able to appoint the provinces, but constitutionally it would be problematic. Also, those provinces are going to receive their budget from the provincial legislature. So what we, and I think when we introduced the bill, we said we had two options. We could go for branches, and you would have a branch of the secretariat and the MEC's office, both performing similar functions, or we could try and align. What we opted for in this bill was alignment in terms of operative governance and cooperation between the different spheres of government, which means that the MEC would have to make that appointment. If we were to make that appointment, we would be interfering with the MEC's powers in terms of the constitution, and we would also not be able to then get that budget from the provinces.
Chairperson, to one comment, one question. I think that I hear what the secretary is saying in terms of where we talk about the secretariat, unless we say provincial secretariat, we're talking about the national secretariat. Now, I'm asking, if you're not part of this committee, after we've passed this legislation, it's now an act, and you read this, and you don't have that explanation, whether it will be clear enough, and whether we shouldn't refer to the national secretariat where we want to refer to the national secretariat, and where we want to refer to the provincial secretariat, that we do so explicitly. Because everybody that's going to read this bill don't have that advantage of that explanation. You understand what I'm saying? If you look at me like that, I'm in trouble. No, because I'm just worried that we must, anybody taking this bill who don't have that explanation of the bill where it refers to the secretariat is referring to the national secretariat. Nowhere does it stand in. Is it written down in the bill? So I'm suggesting where we refer to secretariat, let's refer to national secretariat. I've even looked at the definitions. It simply says secretariat as established in Section 3.1. So throughout the bill, where we refer to secretariat as national secretariat, let's do national secretariat. Just for clarity's sake, it doesn't change anything in terms of context. Then my question in terms of Section 30, provincial secretariat. Subject to Section 14, each MEC must constitute a provincial secretariat for that province. Are we saying there are provinces without them currently?
We actually, I think there are only two provinces that have secretariats. The rest don't have secretariats. They have people that perform similar functions, but they're not. They might have one person doing monitoring and evaluation or whatever, but we only have two provinces with secretaries.
I agree with you, Honourable Member, I've checked, because I thought the secretary is properly defined. It actually refers to a section of this bill, and so I think it makes sense to refer to the national secretary.
Thank you, Chief. I think we will just make the amendment in the interpretation clause. Specifically where the secretary refers to the national secretary and provincial secretaries within the ambit of the provincial secretary. So we clear that this confusion.
No. It's not going to be enough, Chief, because if you then go back to Mr. George's question about the appointment and deployment of personnel, duties and functions of the secretary, it then does not become clear whether it is provincial or national personnel, and it's actually national personnel. So I really think we must be specific in the legislation.
Honourable Craig, let me inform you before you speak. that Honorable Lulek George was very productive before you arrived. I'm just informing you. Very productive before you arrived.
Just that.
You can speak.
Chair, if you look at the, just looking at this, if you look at the iPad bill, we actually, when the iPad bill was dealing with, for instance, the appointment of the executive director, etc., actually that particular chapter two is headed national office. And I'm just wondering, because if you must go through all the bills and put in national secretariat, would it not be better under chapter three to title that national secretary for police? I don't know, I'm just asking. Because chapter four, but it does refer to provincial secretaries, or would it be a problem? I hope that matches the bar of the Honourable George's contributions.
Honourable George, there you are.
Now, I'm not discussing this, but this information, probably we need to look at it as a committee. Because I'm very worried if provinces, it depends on them whether they should have the secretariat or not. Because from what is saying, it means that, I mean, since the secretary, only two provinces, and fortunately one of them is the one where I come from. So I know, and in fact I know both, it used to be Eastern Cape and Gauteng. Now, so it's not true then.
Not anymore.
So they left the police. So I'm just saying this is not a matter of discussion now, but I think as the committee we need to look at it, because we are giving these secretaries now more power to deal with. For instance, if they are going to deal with CPS, they have no structure in a province. You know, they must deal directly. It's going to create problems.
I think to some extent the issue is addressed under 13 because it says must, but to some extent I'm also worried about whether we shouldn't put in a time frame. At least within a year or something like that, because Jefferson, it takes away, 13 addresses Mr. George's, the Honourable George's concern around the fact that they are not in all provinces, because it now instructs them to establish it. But do we want to keep it open-ended? It says it's a date determined by the minister and the MEC, but can't we say we shall not exceed a period of 1 year after enactment of this bill? So that we make sure, because I agree with you, we're giving powers now to provincial secretaries. Some provinces are going to be more advanced in terms of this because they have. And other provinces are not going to get the advantage of the secretariat. So I'm not saying we must be prescriptive in terms of when that date must be, but surely we can say within a certain period of time that this needs to be done, which I think would also empower the national secretariat, in fact, in terms of making sure that it happens.
Subject to section 14, each MEC must constitute a provincial secretariat for that province to support and align the mandate of the provincial secretariat with the mandate of the secretariat. What do you think of the national secretariat? Provided that the date on which a provincial secretariat comes into operation will be determined by the MEC in consultation with the minister.
Yes. Not exceeding a period of
fact, not exceeding a period of
1 year of the enactment.
Yeah, I think there's value in terms of looking into possibility of giving time frame. However, the only concern is in regards to, you know, where we are in terms of the unit and legislation, taking into account the budget process, because some of the, you know, changes to the budget program structure might have financial implications for some provinces.
in which case that if you look at what are the terms and regulations in terms of changing, you know, programs, budget structure as they stand, we are far behind. But then, in terms of the current position, in terms of how we engage with provinces and the members that already, you know, is in place, there is still room, you know, from the point of view of the Secretariat as well as the Minister to engage the relevant provinces in terms of thinking, how are we going to implement this, given the time frame that you have from the budget point of view. That's the only concern.
Can I make a suggestion, Chair, that we don't have to say one calendar year. It can be one financial year, so that it comes into effect the same time as when the civilian secretariat becomes a designated department, when it's got its first vote from Parliament, so which would then be practically 2012-2013. So I'm sure that is more than enough time for them to actually get established.
Madam Chair, I don't believe, but the reason why there is enough seven provinces, even the ones that have them, is if there is no obligation, yeah, we must have obligation and it must have time frames. We can't just leave it to them. Because once we leave it to them, then, see, once also we talk about budget, they're going to, they're not going to be their priority. I think, yeah, as it is, we must put, and I think I agree with Elizabeth, whether we treat a year, or to me, even if it's 2 years, I know you people only like 1 year, but I always believe that in government, with my experience, that things don't happen as quick as people think. So it's always better in government to give enough time. But we must have something that forces provinces to have the secretary.
So you're suggesting 2 years?
Yes. From the time it is
enacted. Chair, I would urge and ask the Honourable George's indulgence that we ask them to go and look at wording. But I think 2 years is very long. I think what we should do is to say, with as soon as the wording should be around the fact that as soon as it is enacted, the very first new financial year after that. In other words, you give them time to budget. Let's say the bill is enacted in January or February next year. The president enacts the bill. It's too late then for the 2011-2012 financial year. But what we then say is in that upcoming financial year, it must be done. Everything must be done and must be in place. So by 2012-2013, it must be completed. So, which in fact is actually, if you look at it, 1 year. And it's possible. I don't think we must give them 2 years. Because I think what the secretary has been saying, and Nongwila has been saying, is the fact that in fact, there's already been discussions at the MINMET level with the MEC. So it's not as if the process is starting from afresh. And the longer we give, the longer they're going to drag their feet. So I would urge that they go and look at wording, but that wording encompass that within the first financial year after the enactment of the bill, they must be established.
I can see Honourable George Akri.
No, I agree. I have no problem with that.
Okay. Functions of province. Okay.
Just before we get on to the functions, I think when we're looking at the... Can I request that we need to clarify between the civilian secretariat for police and the provinces? But it isn't national and provincial because these are not branches. So if we can just look at the wording of that and come back to you on that. So we wouldn't be talking about the national office or whatever because it's different to the ICD. The provinces are not our branches. They're a slightly different structure.
No problem. Wasn't good as the Honourable told
you.
Sorry, this is an interesting remark that I think we need to take in cognizance because what I'm hearing now is that we should actually differentiate between the use of the word police civilian secretariat and provincial secretariat.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the solution in terms of the wording throughout the bill as well. That where we refer to national office, we refer to the police civilian secretariat. Because there's only one police civilian secretariat, and that's the police civilian secretariat at the national level. The rest are actually provincial secretariats.
So then, we move on to clause 14, and you'll also see in the bill, just to highlight what Honourable Van Beek said, is that we basically only have one Secretary of Police. You have a provincial head, but you don't have a provincial Secretary of Police. There's only one Secretary of Police. If you look at clause, the functions of the provincial secretariat, clause 14, in order to support the objectives of the secretariat referred to in section 4 and subject to the principles of cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations contained in chapter 3 of the constitution, each provincial secretariat must align its plans and operations at the provincial sphere of government with the plans and operations of the secretariat. And obviously we're going to have to clarify this terms of what we just discussed. Integrated strategies and systems at the provincial sphere of government with the strategies and systems of the secretariat. So we'll change all of those. We'll make the necessary amendments. The provincial secretariat must, for the purpose of subsection 1, establish competencies and capabilities in its operations to monitor and evaluate the implementation of policing policy in the province, evaluate and investigate police conduct in the province, develop and evaluate safety models and monitoring tools to ensure alignment with the functions of the secretariat, assist the secretariat with any monitoring and evaluation projects, B, promote community police relations, establish and promote partnerships, and manage and enhance community safety structures. Can I just suggest that we would have to this monitor and evaluate this The issue about police conduct, we would have to line that with what we said earlier in the change of our function. But just to highlight that what we're talking about here is the provincial secretary playing a role in terms of monitoring and civilian oversight and partnerships. Policy remains a national competency because police is a national competency. The policy can only be determined by the minister. So we're essentially talking about at a provincial level, they would have a monitoring and evaluation unit and a partnership unit, but not necessarily the third policy unit, just so that people are clear.
Just one question which I asked at the beginning. Listening to what you are saying, why did you make this bill Section 76? Because now you're saying there are no provincial competencies. They are depending on the MEC. Why did you make it Section 76? Because it's effectively a national.
Because of provincial impact. It may be a national competence, but it has different provinces.
Yeah, but the police are the same. Mm-hmm. Police have got provincial impact, but they are Section 75.
Chairperson, the fact of the matter is that it's got budget implications for provincial legislatures and for provincial governments. It's got direct implications for the MECs at the nine provinces. It's establishing structures at the nine provincial departments. And for that reason, it's got to be a Section 76 bill. What I don't understand is why the IPED bill is a Section 76 bill.
Yes, Chair.
Just to support what just been said is that this is a 76 bill because we're placing an obligation on provinces to establish sec. In the past, they could or they couldn't establish provincial secretariats. It was up to them. And as we said earlier, we only had two provinces that have that. In this bill, each province is now required to establish it. So that's why it's a 76 bill.
Okay.
Functions of provincial secretariat in triple agreeing with that. Okay, appointment of heads of provincial secretariat.
The MEC must, in consultation with the minister and subject to the laws governing the Public Service Act, appoint the head of the provincial secretariat in the province. The head of the provincial secretariat is appointed for a 5-year term, which is renewable for one additional term only, subject to the terms and conditions of the public service under the laws governing the public service. The head of the provincial secretariat must be a citizen of the Republic and be a fit and proper person with appropriate knowledge, experience, and qualifications.
Why a limited term? for IP, it's not the case.
IPED is a branch, so this is almost like, as the secretary at a national level operates as an advisor to the minister, a technical policing advisor to the minister, so would the provincial head. So while there's an alignment and a relationship between the secretary of police and the province and the provincial head, the provincial head also is, to some extent, has to be able to advise the MEC on matters as well.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I'll come back to that. Let's go back to the issue. When you have talked about appointment of the secretary, said it must not be a member of the former police service, why have you not said the same thing with the head of provincial police?
No, I think this section of the legislation involved quite lengthy processes of discussions and deliberations with both the MECs and the heads of department in the provinces. It's been probably the most difficult section of the legislation for us to work on, because it isn't so as cut and dry as, for example, the IPED legislation. It was something that some of the provinces have got people who, for example, Housing's head of the secretariat is quite a long time ago, but an ex-police person. So I think they were, if the committee decides to put that back in, but then they must understand that some provinces, for example, in Gauteng, have somebody who used to be a policeman who's head of their secretariat. So it would have implications at that level. So that was the difficulty, I think, in putting it in. But if the committee decides to put it in, as we put it in for the civilian secretary, then the provinces would have to deal with the repercussions of that.
Yeah. I thought you would be talking on the basis of set basic principles. Why? Well, this is based on that. Now, when you say you worried about Gauteng and the region Gauteng, which can die of a heart attack also sitting here, so the problem is solved even before we. Because if you take that route, you could even say, if you want, those that are already appointed. I'm just saying, if look at it, give us the reasons why you are not, you want to open it to police this time. But the issue of somebody who's already employed is the matter that can be resolved. Because especially if you're saying they won't have contracts, I don't know that one. It's got no contract, it's permanent, then it means still, but it's a matter that can be resolved separately.
I think I agree, because I think we're talking about a principle here, not only for today, but for many years to come. What is it that we want to see happening, even in Gauteng, after the heart attack, you know, has but really, what is it that we want to see happening? And I think, as we have said, at national level, I think the principle should apply even at that level, because we're talking about the principle here. And then how to accommodate any person who is there, and we said there isn't a secretariat in Gauteng. I thought you were saying there is a secretariat in Eastern Cape. Oh, it's Gauteng and okay.
So just a question, probably on this appointment, what levels are you talking about in? Or are they also determined by the MEC? See, that to me is very fun. So what you could have a situation where in one province the level is this one, the other province. Are you not going to be anywhere the level in terms of this provincial head?
we haven't put it in because it's not a branch, and we have tried to talk about alignment rather than complete interference in the province. Because when I said I understand that it's principle, but this section of the chapter has been a part of a negotiation between MECs, minister, provinces, and the secretariat nationally. But it's not the same as a branch where we can just come in and determine levels. In some provinces, your HODs, who are going to be your accounting officers, because the head of department in the MEC's office remains accounting officer for the provincial secretariat. In some provinces, those people are DDGs, and in other provinces, they're chief directors. If we were to peg this at a chief director level, there would be a bit of a problem if the accounting officer is on the same level as them. So that's one of the problems that we faced in pegging those levels. It's easy with the ICD because of the branch structure. Here we're dealing with provinces which have very different structures. As I say, some HODs are DDGs, other HODs are chief directors. That's why we found it difficult to peg exactly what level the provincial head should be at.
But I think this gen, you keep on referring to yourself interfere. Mm. We have a bill here that we are processing. And whatever that we say in the bill has nothing to do with you yourself, but has everything to do with the act that we want to pass and the principle that we want to see being followed everywhere. If we are saying, for instance, I'm just setting an example, everybody must be like this. We are saying that, and we're not interfering. Fortunately, Parliament cannot be said to be interfering because it's Parliament that is processing this bill now, not provinces. Mm-hmm. And provinces must implement this bill once it is passed. I'm just saying this so that this is not seen as there was a time where you negotiated, but now we are processing this bill and we want to see it being the law and passed into law. And that is it. And what is it that we want to see happening? And we therefore can actually talk principles here and agree on principles. Mm-hmm. And actually assist whoever so that you are not interfering, but the act says you must do 1, 2, 3, period. I'm saying that. Mm. Otherwise, it will be very difficult because provinces will do different things, and some which will not be able to accommodate. Others don't have secretariat, and we are saying we must have them. And this is exactly what we are saying. So we can go beyond that. Okay. The issue here is, okay, I think we have agreed that probably the principle is that it must not be a former police. In an event, somebody is a secretariat today and a former SAP member, I think we must find a way of accommodating that. But remember, we have, this is a renewable one, so it will also impact on that person as well. So somebody who, without any heart attack, will phase out from the system. Okay?
Chair, can they maybe give us an idea? Because, I mean, they say there are only two. Do we have a problem?
That is what she has said.
Oh, sorry,
she has said in Gauteng there is the secretariat, there is a former service member.
Sorry, I wasn't
there. And we're actually saying that may not necessarily mean that we cannot say a person should not be a former member. We can actually accommodate that in the bill to say if indeed this is what should happen.
And the transitional arrangement.
Yes, it's transitional arrangements. We can actually accommodate that today. Okay. In fact, the issue that we were discussing is the issue of the level. Yes, the level. We're talking about chief director and Ms. Jenny saying others that the DDGs and so on and so forth. Do you want to have provincial secretaries
being DDGs or chief directors or anything between the two. You go to Gauteng, it's DDG. You go to KZN, it's DG. I mean, it's DG for that matter. You go to the other provinces, chief director, as it is happening. And it can happen.
And in Mpumalanga, is it a director?
In fact, in Mpumalanga, it can actually be a... I'm sorry.
Sorry, when I refer to DEGs, I'm referring to the HRD, not the head of province. The HRD is basically the accounting officer for the province. The provincial secretary is somebody different, just so that we're clear. The HRD, for example, if you take some provinces, you have a Department of Transport and Safety, and the HRD covers both functions. So they're the head of the MEC's department, and they may do transport functions and safety and security functions. They are the accounting officer for that MEC's department. What we're talking about here is a provincial secretariat, a head of the provincial secretariat who falls under that HRD. That's so just so that we're clear. So we're not suggesting that there would be provincial heads of provincial secretariat at the DDG level. What we're saying is at the HRD level, there's a variety. Some are chief directors, some are DDGs.
Yeah, I heard what you said, but I think we are limited in terms of what we can prescribe. I think we are limited in terms of what we can prescribe, because we are not funding this bill, the full extent of the bill. We are funding the national part of the bill. We're not funding the provincial part of the bill. And I think there's a very, very, very fine, that's my reading of the thing, a very fine and thin line for us to walk in terms of, I'm even worried about the terms that we determine. I'm not saying that's going to be a problem, but even there, one's going to be sensitive about it. National government is not funding the full extent of this bill. 9 sections of this bill are going to be funded by 9 different provincial governments. And I do believe that we do have a bit of a challenge in terms of how far we can go in being prescriptive. In terms of levels, in terms of salaries, etc. I actually do believe we've got a challenge. In context.
But then, madam,
it means we've got a challenge even in 15.
Yeah.
Yes. If they, which they have done provinces, you say they must appoint a head. If they say no, we would like, we're not defying you, we would like to appoint a head, we don't have money. Like it's like I used to have one. And probably because they say, no, it's not our priority, we don't have money, out. When that lady is by the left, they say, we're not going to appoint anybody. So I'm saying, that's why I'm saying, I'm just worried that it means, I don't know how effective we can be on the provinces, on the secretary. If they say, no, we're not defying the act, we want to appoint a head, but we don't have money, and therefore, with limited resources we have prioritized, say, roads and transport. Provincial head of provincial state is not our priority.
Thank you, Chair. I think Ms. van der Beek is correct with regard to our limitations with regard to provinces, and with regard to financial implications as one consideration. I think 13 was drafted in that. To give effect to that intention, where we say that provided that date on which a provincial secretary comes into operation will be determined by the MEC in consultation with the minister. So that is to give effect to that financial consideration or implications for establishing provincial secretaries, because the model followed in the bill is more of a cooperative nature. It's not trying to interfere. We try to limit the interference as such, because it's not branches for that matter. From our perspective, I just wanted to raise that point,
But
what does that mean? Does it mean we cannot have principles to say this is what we think should happen? What does it mean as we're processing this bill?
Can I just respond? I think that principles are one thing, but to determine issues around like levels of the appointment, that would be too much. I think the issue of saying that there can't be a police officer civil to the deputy, that's not a problem. But it's when you start looking at the levels, and it's going to create a problem for the province if their HOD is at the same level as the provincial head, and the provincial head is having to report to them as their accounting officer. I think that's the level at which we're saying non-interference. I think that the bill makes it a requirement for them to establish this, and I think Nombula will talk about the processes that we've already been engaging with Treasury and with the provinces to make sure that actually happens, that provinces can't say there's a financial, we're not going to do it because of a financial obligation. But Nombula can explain those better than myself because she's been the person from our office engaging in those processes. But also, if you read on in the bill, it does allow the secretariat, it does create a leeway for the secretariat to intervene if the provinces do not comply with Section 30. But Nombula can also talk about the processes around Treasury, because I think Treasury are very much on board in terms of this clause, and provinces will not be able to say we don't have the finances to do that.
Mm-hmm. The first one is really in the drafting of the legislation. The one prior consultation, extensive consultation on two aspects. The first aspect was to say what have been the weaknesses over the period, you know, the 5-year period in terms of what we mean oversight. There was agreement in terms of the challenges. And then also further to that, to say how do we then, moving forward, make sure that those weaknesses that have been identified over a period of time are clearly and correctly addressed. And then part of the resolution that, or recommendations that we discussed was that, first of all, let's look at the functions before we even come to the structure. Are the functions within all the line provinces in the sector aligned? And clearly, the discussions came to the conclusion that they were not. And then if they're not aligned, because we are one of the remaining sectors that hasn't been customized, National Treasury will be trying over a period of years to try and actually customize the sector, because it makes it easy, even from the point of view of the National Minister of Fleet, to have a clear sense of indication of what exactly is happening in provinces, because they find that even in terms of reporting, people report on whatever is easy to do. But then what you've done moving forward to say, let's look at the APPs as a practical point of view, because the APPs are also informed during your budget, right? And then if we agree on the sector indicators and objectives, which we have by now, then it begins to indicate what kind of structure you should have to give effect to the APP that you to the sector objectives and indicators that we have agreed upon. And then in the end of discussion, even the January, actually with the meeting with the HODC and Cape Town, all the departments actually were given an opportunity to present their organizational structures, so that you begin to see where are gaps, where are areas of possibility to align. That's where we actually begin to pick up that the only three provinces actually had structures that were similar to what was envisaged by the National Secretary in terms of the coordination with provinces. In that very meeting, in the early stages from January, there was agreement that pending the drafting of this bill to this stage, there will be continuous engagement in terms of how then you begin to streamline the organogram to talk to what you've agreed as the sector indicators and objectives. Now, moving beyond that, the only issue that we never entertained, really, because from our reading of the Constitution in terms of concurrent functions and different areas of responsibility for the Minister of Fleet and the MECs in provinces, our understanding of that, we could not then make a determination in terms of, for instance, the level, as we're discussing now. I'll tell you why, Chairperson. So if you look also in terms of the provincial competencies, if you have to adapt budget program structures, there has to be a provincial treasury to get involved. There has to be also office of the premier to be involved, which is completely different from the point of view of the SIP itself. Here, clearly, there are structures that are in place at provincial level that if we have to go red route, we then have to engage. And then further up, over and above this, the question of the alignment of the structures is such that it has reached a point where, in terms of our continuous engagement with the national treasury, because in terms of the treasury regulations, they make the determination in consultation with the national department, which is in this case ourselves as a secretariat, and provinces, to say, how do you then begin to structure your program structure, which is called the budget program structure. There has been, to a certain extent, a level of agreement, but one area, which is really my reservation purposes, is the area of the level, to say, do you really want to go that route? And if we do, what are the implications? Because we don't want to, at the same time, yes, we have received quite a substantial support from provinces, but we don't want now actually to step on their toes, so to speak, by actually exceeding even the powers and the mandate that we have through the Constitution and even the bill that you're trying to table. So those are just the areas of concern.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think we must proceed. It's very clear we can't deny that we are at the mercy of the provinces. Because that one, we're not going to... You know, we are South Africans, we stay here. We know what provinces are capable of. I'm talking in departments where they're given money for particular things. In some cases, they've not done that. They're given money in Department of Health to make sure that they are medicine in the clinics, the money for ARV, the that and that. You discover in other provinces that is not done. And that is discovered when they're not done. You see, good, carry on negotiating, let's carry on. But we must know that I think Annelies was right again. I think she's very shocked today. that we have limitations. It's not the same like the IT.
Yeah.
See, because there we're making laws which we can be able. You see, for instance, just assuming we go out for oversight, talking as this committee, arriving in Eastern Cape, you say, do you have a provincial secretary? You say, no. And say, but the law that says that within a particular period, yeah, we know about the law. Looks like if you give us money now, definitely implement the law. We don't have money. What do you do? Nothing. You see, because I thought when you talk about treasury, you're going to say, unless the treasury was specific, because that's not how money of provinces, unfortunately, they are allocated to the provincial treasurer.
Mm-hmm.
It is the provincial treasurer that allocates money to the various. And they must deal with according in terms of their priorities. So if this provincial sector is not their priority, they definitely not do it. But I don't think we should be. Let's hope for the best.
Yeah, no, we can only hope for the best. That's really unfortunate, and I understand the limitations. In fact, there's tea outside.
What is that?
There is tea outside, tea and biscuits, I'm told.
Gracious.
So members can just grab a cup of tea and we can come back so that probably we just cover this chapter and we can then attend chapter 4.
Yes, and
chapter 4 can then attend.
No, I'm not going to do it.
I do? Why didn't they go the branch route?
Because of money. You must remember that
there was asked for budget.
No. The problems that budget related to the original of our name are bigger than the national.
But it's not there. It's not there. But the hotel is
not there. No, but they did it under the they did have signs. But they did it under the IGB. So if you go to the ground, you lose all that money. So I hear what you say. I mean, ideally, they should have, we should ask for the money. But we can never ask for the money that they are currently going to get. I think what we're going to do is something like 25 million or 32 million or something like that. It's huge. I know it's more than the national. What's KZN's budget? It's much more than yours.
It's huge.
52?
Yeah,
I think it's 52 or 34 million. And yours is currently 5.
You've been comparing. Yeah. That's the problem. That's been the problem. Ideally, that's what should have happened. We should have come to the side, but we were really a provincial secretary, but we must stay down that way. Unless Treasury suddenly said they will be here.
I want to ask you, in fact, how many people are on the board? The problem.
Really, I mean,
this is not assisting. If you go, it would actually be interesting to do a proper costing if you should go that route.
I think
they are all entities, not only talking about the ones that you are aligning for the next one, which then makes it, incumbent on the MEP, because now, the leader, whether they are minister, to say what are the challenges. Because clearly the thing that you've agreed upon, I think that we're in their own entities and budget as well. So you don't find any space for them to say many of them at all. That's why even when you're aligning now, the MEP, so that you have sort of like a national plan, but also making space within the national plan in terms of certain dynamics that you begin to get the problem with. But say, from the sector, this is the national plan, and this is where everybody can sit. But if we try to include maybe some of the provisions, maybe debating now,
Okay, see you. Thanks.
I think it's because people are influenced the whole country.
To do what?
To be distracted. You know, people they say they want services. The first thing they give is a service that is already there. They destroy its life raft. What type of thinking is this? You're complaining about services. Now, there is one service, at least, which is there already. No, you destroy it. You destroy this one which is there. And you want us to believe you that you want services.
No, it's not. Definitely not about service.
Yeah, it's really the only service that is there. And you say one service. Look what they did last night in this place, lots of helping people. The distraction they made last night. They distracted, they said they are processing for service. But they distract the very limited, if they are complaining, the very limited resources that are there. They are destroying them. And they want us to believe that they want to. One. And they let them just go away. We have killed them, not the car. You just go to school, you know. So you come in school to drive, you see, so I know.
Education, I think, but at least those
Duties and functions. The head of the provincial secretariat A is responsible for the performance of the functions of provincial secretariat as contemplated in section 14, or such duties and functions assigned to the head of the provincial secretariat by the secretary in terms of section 9. Is responsible for the resources and employees of the provincial secretariat in the province. Must take all decisions necessary or expedient for performance of the functions of the provincial secretariat referred to in section 14, or otherwise assigned to him or her by the secretary in terms of section 9 or by the MEC of the province concerned. D. Must ensure that national policing policies and directives or instructions issued by the minister are implemented by the police service in the province and report to the head of the provincial department and MEC thereon, must evaluate and review practices, methodologies and performance of the police service in the province and report to the head of the provincial department and MEC thereon, must perform such functions as the head of a provincial department or the MEC may consider necessary or expedient to ensure civilian oversight over the police. Can I just go back to must ensure national police policies and directives or instructions issued by the minister are implemented. I would suggest that actually is a provincial commissioner's role. Sorry, I think it was a drafting error, and it should be to monitor the implementation of those things rather than to implement them, because that becomes a. And I think if you refer back to the submission of facts, they pointed that out. So I think if we could maybe look at rewording that section.
Section
D. Must ensure that national policing policies and directions or instructions issued by the minister are implemented by the police. It should be to monitor the implementation of those directives as opposed to actually doing the implementation.
Question two?
Yes. On D and E, would it not be necessary for those reports also to come, even if it is a copy of those reports, to come to the National Secretariat as well? Because currently it doesn't make provision for it. And how are you going to know?
Yeah.
So I would suggest
that
we say copies of such reports be provided to the National Secretariat.
D and E.
Just a question, Madam. How do you make sure that whatever this person either instructed by the MEC or whatever he or she reports to the civilian secretary?
There's a section 19 which is still coming up, reporting and referrals. So I think I take on board what is just said about adding reporting in here. But there's also a section on reporting and referrals under Clause 19.
Okay. No, I think with me, already the part which I already mapped, she's already dealt with it. But I was worried about the 16.1D.
Okay. Okay. I move on.
If an MEC has lost confidence and we need to align this with what we said earlier in terms of the removal of the secretary, if the MEC has lost confidence in the head of the secretary, that MEC may, in consultation with the minister, institute appropriate proceedings for removal or transfer of or disciplinary action against the head of the provincial secretary in accordance with the laws governing the public service. Despite the provisions in subsection 1, the MEC may, in consultation with the minister, remove the head of the provincial secretariat of office on account of misconduct, ill health, inability to perform their duties.
If the MEC has confidence in the head of provincial secretariat, if we're deleting that, you know, actually saying the MEC may, in consultation with the minister, institute appropriate proceedings for the removal of or transfer of or disciplinary action against the head of provincial secretariat in accordance with the laws governing public services. This is talking to the disciplinary processes. And despite the provisions of subsection 1, the MEC may, in consultation with the minister, remove the head of the provincial secretariat from office on account of misconduct. As section 1 and 2, misconduct. Well, you will definitely, if it is misconduct, any time you follow the disciplinary process.
I also find a bit of a contradiction here in terms of the secretariats in the secretaries in the provinces, the provincial secretariat of the provincial secretariats, are appointed also for 5-year terms. And why are we going into so much detail about transfer, disciplinary, etc.? Shouldn't that thing be more or less the same as with the civilian secretary?
Because I think one and two A and B will almost mean one and the same thing. You still have to follow disciplinary process. If it is misconduct, you'll not just fire or whatever. If it is inability to perform the duties of that office effectively, almost in health, yeah. So I would also agree that we just have one and we delete that one and we align it to what we said. Yeah. Vacancies?
Chair, on vacancies, can I suggest that put subsection 2, the person may not act, actually reflect the changes that we made to the secretaries acting and that we made in the ICD. So clause 1 speaks to what was in the applies to the secretary. The only difference is the MEC must consult with the minister on it. But clause 2 we would need to align with what we have agreed to earlier in terms of the vacancies of the secretary and the vacancies of the executive director.
I don't have a problem with the suggestion, although I don't think it's going to be the same as with the executive director and the secretary. You will remember that with the provincial heads of the IFIT, we gave a shorter period of time for those positions to be filled. And I think one must actually look at the same year as well. We give a shorter period. We set, I think we set 6 months for provincial aids. And I think here we must do the same. That is 6 months and not a year.
The vacancy must be filled within 6 months.
Okay. Reporting and referral.
The head of the the provincial secretary in each province must, through the head of the provincial department, submit to the MEC and the secretary quarterly reports on the activities of the provincial secretary in the province and on any matter as or when required by the secretary. The head of the provincial department must submit regular reports to the MEC and the relevant committee in the provincial legislature. The head of the provincial department in each province must, through the MEC, table an annual report in the provincial legislature on the activities of the provincial secretariat in the province. Submit a copy of the annual report tabled in terms of paragraph A to the secretary.
Yeah, but I thought I asked a question, but doesn't look like it's covered here. You see, if she submitted a report to the head of the department, my question was, it must be registered that the copy of that report, whether it's the MEC or what, whether it is the head of, you might find the head of the department who isn't interested, probably more inclined to deal with transport, he's not interested in it. That's why I said the copy, there must be something that says the copy of any report must be submitted to the head of the secretary.
The
Chair, I think that we agreed that on those clauses in 1616, we were going to add where they report to the MEC, they also submit a copy to the secretary. I understood that was the suggestion in clause 16. So we're covering those two the items earlier where they're submitting reports to the MEC or head of department because they must submit a copy. But here, in addition to that, we're saying that they must submit quarterly reports and the annual report.
Yeah, but we say they must be new copies of the quarterly reports as well.
It does say that. It does say that. The head of the provincial secretary must submit to the head of the MEC and the secretary.
Oh, okay.
And the secretary,
yeah.
The quarterly report.
Sorry.
The annual report, there must be a copy. The tabling is done by the head of department, not by us, but they must give us a copy.
Chair, can I ask a question? I'm not sure if it's a stupid question, but in 19.1, it says there the head of a provincial secretary in each province must, through the head of a provincial department, submit to the MEC and the secretary. I just want to get understanding. Does that mean the report would go through the head of the department, who in turn submits to the MEC and the secretary and the civilian secretary?
Yes. Just explain that the head of department is actually the accounting officer.
Yeah.
So if we cut them out of this process, it would be quite problematic.
No, I just want to see.
That's why the copy, the issue of the copy becomes very important. But this process on its own is wrong. Must table to the head of the department, and then the head of the department is submitted to the MEC, and then it finds its way up to the minister. That's why I'm saying it's important that issue of the copy,
yeah.
Not only the issue of the copy and to the secretary and the minister is very important.
That's for the annual report.
Yeah,
and to the council,
yeah.
Maybe, and the secretary.
It must go through the head.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you say?
Yeah, no. Anything today? Do members have anything to comment on the work that we have covered so far? I thought we will go honorable and then correct.
Sorry.
I'm saying, do you have any comment you want to make on the work that we have covered so far? I thought we'll go as far as chapter 5, so that when we meet tomorrow at 2, we then proceed to chapter 5, chapter 6, as we reach, I think, plan of that law. As we have done with the IP bill, the secretariat, as well as the state law advisor, will attend to the homework, so that when we start tomorrow, they present those areas that we said they must look into, and then we'll then proceed to chapter 5 and chapter 6 tomorrow, if we all agree. If we all agree. The question I have is, if you have in any way costed a model wherein we go the branch, provincial branch route, if you have in any way tried to cost it and got it just way beyond what we can afford, then I think this model, which we will have to live with it, but I think it's not an ideal model.
Chair, we haven't actually costed the cost of branches in each province for two reasons. One is because it would be, if one looks at the constitution and the functions of the NEC, they have oversight and they get budgets for that. And some of them have huge budgets, 10 times more than our budgets. If we went the provincial route, basically we would have Treasury and government funding two functions. If we went the provincial branch route as it stands now, we would have basically Treasury funding twice for the same work to be done. What we have done, however, is we've looked at the provinces themselves and the budgets that they have, and we've costed what this means for the provinces. And I think we're talking about, I think, three provinces that would require additional funding from Treasury to implement this. The other provinces actually have such major budgets that for them to implement this should, in effect, given the size of their budget, not be difficult. So the reason why we didn't cost the branch route is because essentially what that would mean is Treasury would be paying for two functions, for two different offices, which would essentially be performing similar functions in terms of the roles that the MECs have as oversight.
I think the question you're asking, Madam Chair, we were talking about it outside. I think we must regard this as a start. It's not a desirable situation. We must agree on that. And I don't agree with the but what I'm saying, looking at where they are now, let's regard this as a start. But I think what you're saying, you must begin to start looking at long term. Because as it is now, it is not ideal. We all agree on that. But this is the start, but they must, on long term, they must begin to cost how much. Because in other provinces, they are not going to get cooperation at all, especially from heads of department, even sometimes from the MECs.
No, that is
especially
I think you are beautifully
deceptive.
I think we are agreeing with what you are saying, Jenny, but also with what Honorable Church is saying. Definitely not an ideal situation. We were accepting it because maybe the situation demands of us to do that. And going forward, I think it's something that we need to revisit, court, and so on, and talk on the basis of what we have at hand.
I think the importance of this in terms of what's been said about we're working towards something, I think that to justify us establishing provincial branches, if this doesn't work, it would clearly show that despite legislation, this doesn't work, and therefore we need to go this route. So I think that's why working towards, if it works, well and good, and it's great. But if it doesn't work, it justifies the position to go a different route.
And I know even Honorable George will agree with us if we are to amend the Constitution.
No, definitely.
Now, thank you very much for
being here, we are adjourning now. We will be meeting tomorrow at 2 in room V227 tomorrow. So that on Friday, we are not going to have this meeting. So we have moved the Friday meeting to Thursday.
That is all for you.
Thank you very, very much. The meeting is closed.
Perfect.